Welcome to the Race to Rugby World Cup pod with Ron and Adam from the side of the road, somewhere on the planet.
Race to Rugby World Cup pod. We're sitting here in Auckland at Phil Crotty's house. Rested, legs are not sore. We've been off the bike for a week. We're getting ready to wrap up this series of podcasts for Race to Rugby World Cup 2021.
I think most podcasts in our research last two episodes. I think this is like our 24th episode or something like that. So it's certainly been something we've enjoyed doing. And I'm looking forward to perhaps in the next leg or sometime in the future actually listening back to themselves and doubling our listenership relive some of the journey we've had over the last 209 days plus this week off.
It's quite impressive. We've done this without a studio. We're going to get up to a questions and wrap-ups in our own heads at the end of this, but someone was bringing up this. Ron and I get a lot of, why don't you have a YouTube channel? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And if I point to you to some a YouTube influencer and the equipment that they need, the studio time, the editing tools, they spend a lot of money to deliver a high-class video. You got to understand, we're living on bicycles and we sleep in a different bed every day of the week. We're very impressed with how this went. And I actually haven't looked at the analytics of listeners, but it's irrelevant. So before we get criticism on our podcast, we're very proud of it. And we have done it. Wouldn't even say it's on the cheap, but just it's impressive. We've done it with two microphones,
Zoom recorder.
Zoom recorder. And, we record every once in a while. I think the quality has been great. Audio Bits, thanks for mixing it for us. And, Dean and Kath for putting, the files and that in the correct order and making sure that it's released on time. But if anyone ever out there wants to do podcasts, it's not impossible. It's actually quite easy.
Yeah, it probably adds about 2 or 3 kilos of gear, of stuff to our gear. It's pretty robust. It wasn't that, it wasn't that expensive. It wasn't that cheap, but we got the best quality we could afford and that we did a bit of research on. And I think of all the stuff we put out there, this is actually probably almost the easiest because it's just you and I sitting down and finding an hour to talk. We upload the file, which takes 20 minutes to Kath. They do their bit. Kath and the team do their bit to get it out to the world. But I know in terms of the other social media stuff, the photographs and Instagrams and the Facebooks and that can actually take a lot more time. And this is just you and I talking. And it's just for us basically a diary, plus for anybody else who wants to listen. So it's probably felt the least amount of chore, but that's me personally speaking, of all the things we've done.
It's incredible. Posting an Instagram, my sister slated me for not keeping my TikTok up to shape or whatever. But when you post an Instagram on the way we've done this trip with commercial partners and so on, we can't just willy-nilly write a copy and have spelling mistakes and not thank the correct people. Not that that's a chore, yeah. But it takes just 20 minutes on that copy, finding the correct Instagram handles and. Do we do it a post, a reel? Do we do it 16x9, 9x16, et cetera, et cetera? That's just Instagram. Then you go Twitter. Then you go Facebook. Then you have to do your TikTok, Emma. then you do, we don't on Snapchat. We've got YouTube and. By the end of that, it's bedtime for us. It's probably 7 p.m. Yeah. But, this is a cool medium. I think people should support podcasts and use it as a way just to escape the world once in a while. Ron and I listen to thousands of podcasts on our cycle, audiobooks, and so it's quite cool that we can contribute to that community. So, yeah.
Thanks to our super fans, because we do get some comments, and there are a few people out there, but no idea, as Adam says, on the analytics, but there are people that message and say, when's the next pod coming out? Please don't ever stop it. This makes my week type thing. So to those people, thanks so much in particular.
So our last pod, we were with Batters at Turangi. Mispronounced, pretty sure I have mispronounced it. And actually, before we started this, I was going to ask you, but we'll get to that because it will be another embarrassing moment for us two suffers in New Zealand with pronunciation. But 30th of September, we woke up day 201 and we headed towards Hamilton, Cambridge.
Cambridge. So we got Mr. Batters.
Mr. Batters.
So this is our confession times as well here on the Race to Rugby World Cup. So we've been obviously very anal and particular about making sure we cycled every inch possible on this journey. But by the time we got to Turangi, we did have a few obligations that we had lined up and just couldn't move. And for various reasons, we just could not get from Turangi to Hamilton in one day that we needed to, and including a couple of stop-offs, which we'll talk about now. At rugby museums and things like that. At the velodrome and things like that. So Mr. Batters kindly picked us up. We recorded the podcast in the morning. Mr. Batters picked us up. We had lunch in Taupo on the way up. So we drove up with Lake Taupo on our left-hand side. Had a great lunch there.
It was miserable weather.
Yeah.
It was actually horrific. Headwind.
Yeah, and we felt very unguilty getting a lift up to the restaurant and enjoying a lunch there before heading off to Cambridge and to go and visit Cycling New Zealand.
We visited Cycling New Zealand. They're based in a high performance center. They have a velodrome, a gym. It's obviously catered for more cycling, but a lot of the Olympic athletes make their way there and use the facilities.
Rowing in particular.
Yeah, and it's quite incredible. New Zealand's a very small country in terms of population and actually size. And, they're always at the forefront of sporting excellence. You're making sure they get their medals, especially in women's sport. You know, they're always encouraging women's sport from a young age.
And medals per population, they really punch way above their weight.
Yeah, and you can see the facility was incredible. And we were actually hosted by someone you knew from the rugby circles.
Yeah, so my old colleague from Hong Kong Rugby, Tim Baker, used to be one of the senior referees there. With everything that's happened in Hong Kong and the Hong Kong Sevens and everything, him and his wife moved back to New Zealand, and he's found himself as manager of the New Zealand track cycling team. And he'll tell you himself that he knew absolutely about nothing cycling beforehand, but he's learning quickly and looks as happy as anything. So. Great, appreciated him showing us around the velodrome and just watching those pros, those Olympians, Commonwealth medal winners doing their thing on that velodrome track. It's pretty impressive. And I think, I certainly didn't have the balls to go and give it a crack in a loop there. I would have been
also a bit scared soft.
That bank at the top are pretty heavy.
I cycled around the Paris-Roubaix velodrome back in 2018 or 19, one of those years. But it's quite daunting and... so close to the finish. Back then, I almost fell every 4 or 5 meters. And, you know, I'm a young gun trying my luck, pushing the pace. But I was like, nope. On a slick surface like that with a proper fixed bike, no brakes, I also avoided it. It's that steep. So if you ever get a chance to go to velodrome, just wear knee pads and elbow guards because it's quite rough. That was our first pit stop. And one of the main stops in Cambridge as well was to go and visit the Hautapu.
Yeah, Hautapi. I think I'm sure we both got it wrong. but before we criticize ourselves too badly about about our pronunciation. At the game yesterday between Fiji and South Africa at Waitakere Stadium, Waitakere. And the stadium announcer, I think he made a good effort at the Fijian and South African names. But I don't think we should be too embarrassed at our efforts. Let me just put it like that.
Yeah. So we were at Hautapu Rugby Club and hosted by Dean, another Hong Kong affiliation of rugby. It's quite crazy. They've spread their wings around the world. It was treated as a social fundraiser for Child Fund Rugby.
Yeah, Hautapu, it's one of the province of Waikato, absolute institution. The club had a few All Blacks.
Liam Neeson,
yeah. Matt Phillips.
Liam Neeson. Wait a minute. That's an actor. No. That's going to be in my head. Okay, well, we'll get
Liam
on to
Messon.
That. Messon, I think. Yeah.
And Matt Phillips, a friend of ours from Hong Kong as well, who actually played for Italy against the All Blacks in a couple of World Cups. But so a club with a lot of history. Dino, a good friend of ours. Nick Hewson as well. A lot of connection between Hautapu Rugby Club and Valley Club in Hong Kong. So that's how it came about. And just great to be at a good old school sort of rugby club on a Friday evening. The locals there sharing our stories. And I think we hope we've persuaded a few of them to text rugby to 2474 if you're in New Zealand. And just be good to be surrounded by good rugby people on a Friday night in Waikato.
Yeah, and we were able to enjoy the beers because Unfortunately, another own up. The next day, we again couldn't cycle. We had another commitment with DHL New Zealand at their airport warehouse. Is it a warehouse?
Yeah, their staff at the at their staff. And it was an annual staff day, but they haven't had one since COVID. So it was a big big function there at their facility at the airport. A brand new facility, fantastic facility, and we just got our timing slightly wrong. Again, we just mean we couldn't quite get there on the Saturday that they were hosting our bicycle. And again, pretty miserable weather. So once again, we didn't feel too guilty.
And that route from Cambridge to Auckland, you know, there is obviously a touring way around it, but the most efficient way is the motorway, which I think is not allowed, one. And two, it's completely unscenic. It's just pretty busy, head down, busy roads. So again, we obviously do feel guilty, but not too bad. And we got into DHL. What is it called? A distribution center. Yeah, is that what it's called?
Their service center.
Service center. Yeah. Which was quite epic. You know, you don't, normal people, unless you work for these sort of companies, don't get the opportunity to like just hang around a distribution center.
And you realize what it just gives you a little taste of what goes into when you send your package from Tokyo to Auckland. Normally, just gives you a little bit of understanding what goes into making sure it's delivered within 48 hours and on time and in the right place. And I think it was really good for us once again. You know, every time we do get to visit DHL facilities, whether it was in Vietnam or Cambodia or here in New Zealand or in Fiji, we have always been treated like family, and the welcome was very, very warm. And it was very cool as well. So Child Fund Rugby through Fiona engaged with Auckland Rugby to facilitate the Child Fund, effectively a Child Fund
session,
but with the children of the DHL staff. So a great way to sort of integrate DHL support of Child Fund Rugby and actually to sort of turn the tables a little bit and give these kids who are lucky enough to have parents who sort of all work at DHL and get good opportunities in life, but again, to teach them the same sort of life skills and just to give them an idea of what Child Fund's all about. And I think the way that, first of all, the coaches got involved, they obviously prepped very, very well to make sure they understood the Child Fund curriculum. And I think the kids got a lot out of it, and the adults, to be fair. So it was a fun day, very fun day.
It proves the program works no matter your social status. A lot of these kids, well, you know, they're not equal in status, but I'm pretty sure most of them go to a decent school and they have, you know, a roof over their head and food, and their parents are there supporting them. But they were engaged from start to finish, no matter what. You often think that these programs, people from a more disadvantaged background appreciate it a little bit more, but it wasn't the case. These kids were completely engaged and focused the whole way through, which, you know, was great. So, you know, kudos to the Child Fund Rugby program, because it's universal. The standards, it's irrelevant whether you come from a wealthy background or from the poorest of poor places. Yeah. So, it was cool to watch.
Very cool. And it was great to see Mark Foy, the country manager there. We've got a little gift to him, which Tony Khan asked us to deliver from Tokyo. So we'll make sure that gets done before the end of the World Cup.
We were then picked up by the Brodies, family friends of my family, not just me, like my mom, dad, Emma. They've been around for a long time. They've recently immigrated to New Zealand. Well, not recently, but they immigrated. And we went into their household, towards the North Shore of Auckland. And, you know, we had the night off. We actually went out for dinner with them. We haven't finished our trip yet, but there was slowly but surely our shoulders were just slowly dropping, knowing that we were almost done. And we prepared for
The shoulders were dropping, the weight off the shoulders, not because
of weight of the shoulders. Sorry, yeah.
I think the reason to give people context, saying, well, you've already arrived in Auckland, you know, why is the trip not over? And we'll talk about going to Whangarei now, but we were sneaking past Auckland to head further north before coming back for the opening game. So this is still about 4 or 5 days before their opening game,
just for
context.
And we had 150 kilometers to do between Sunday and Saturday, technically, right? We had 300 kilometers.
We had to get to Whangarei by the Wednesday for some commitments there with Northern Rugby and Biking Northern, so which effectively gave us Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and half of Wednesday to do 150Ks. So I think the initial plan was to do it.
Which is easy for Ron and I.
Yeah.
It's we 40. Do that in a day.
It's what, well, exactly. So it's about 40Ks a day. And I mean, I think we must just also bring up the point that as much as we appreciate Dino's hospitality in Cambridge, I did leave you with a bit of a sinus turned, hay fever turned sinus.
Turned pneumonial bronchitis. No, it was hectic, but couldn't breathe. Couldn't open my eyes.
Yeah, so that, but the good thing was that because we only had 150Ks to do in 3.5 days, we didn't need to go and do it we didn't need to go and do it
in four
straight away off the bat. Yeah. And so we could afford a day or two off with the Brodies to help recover and just prepare, get some strength back. And also, you know, it was obviously important that this is a week that you've been looking for. We've both been looking forward to for 30 weeks. And you don't want to be arriving at Eden Park the following Saturday full of snot and misery.
We had to do tests, so I didn't want to fail those.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did a little recce on the Sunday to get fresh air. It was probably a dumb decision on my behalf, but you never know. Like sometimes getting fresh air, doing a loop around clears the sinuses, but it was actually very beneficial. We just did a 50-kilometer loop of Auckland.
Yeah, I was effectively doing a recce for what we knew, because we knew we'd be leaving the Brodies on the Saturday to head to Eden Park, 34Ks or so. And we knew we were also going to have some people joining us. So we just thought, let's use this opportunity, stretch the legs, hopefully clear out the sinuses, and very, very chilled pace, just go and recce the route so that we knew that when we came back a week later, there wouldn't be any sort of dramas or confusion with the group. But as I say, maybe in your under your circumstances with the pouring rain.
Rain, wind, it didn't help. But it's fine. We did it. And we survived. The next day, I decided to just lay in the bed the whole day.
Yeah.
And that got me ready for the 4th of October, where we legitimately went towards Whangarei via Mangafai,
which is now day 205, just for context, and basically heading straight north from Auckland.
Straight north. We actually not on the highway one. We took a side road eventually.
Yep.
The coastal route.
Yeah, the tourist scenic route via Mangafai, which. JVR, who we met at that first dinner we had with the Brodies, recommended. And, it's a famous, I think, surfing area. There's some fantastic golf courses. He's a very, very keen golfer. And I'm very glad we did. It was a beautiful detour. And again, it was 100Ks exactly. Mm-hmm. We did. Ended up staying at a backpackers that evening. We arrived, it was a Tuesday. It was happy hour at the local pizza parlor. So we had 2 for the price of 1 pizzas, which was a good way to, it's always a good way to end a cycling day.
I love pizza.
Yeah. And I think that afternoon into Mangafai, and obviously the next morning we'll talk about as well, was a beautiful little detour. So
yeah.
Well worth the
great coastal route. We'll wrap up at the end of this on our journey, but sometimes we've seen all types of coastlines. You see dirty beaches, clean beaches, beautiful cliffs, nice weather, bad weather, clean sand, dirty sand, nice waves, no waves. And so I don't know, like when you look at this, you're just like, wow, that's amazing. And then you start comparing it to the thousands of coastlines you've seen. So we're very privileged in that aspect, but that part of the world is very beautiful. It's got its own twist compared to the west coast of the South Island. So this would be the east coast of the North Island, So it's yeah.
Some amazing, beautiful holiday homes and batches, as they call them here. And, a lot more, although it's relatively sparsely populated, there's a lot of big properties with big fancy homes. And then compared to the west coast of the South Island, where you'd cycle for hours and hours, maybe see the odd farm, but very, very few people around.
And it was a nice quiet road leading towards the main road. So this would be the 5th of October, and our final pushed as north as possible we could go, which would be Whangarei on our New Zealand leg. It was going to be a 60-kilometer.
Correct, yeah.
About 60Ks. A lot of headwind that day, I remember. Not unexpectedly, you never expect headwind, but it just comes Yeah, it was a lot.
It was actually a bit harder than we. It's not, this part of the country is beautiful, but there's no flat section, so it's sort of up and down. And we need to get to Whangarei by lunchtime because we had a very, very special arrival planned.
Yeah, so this is where I'm going to bust us both because I can't remember the word enough. So embarrassed now, but
Pōwhiri,
the welcoming.
Correct.
Okay, well you smashed it because Northland Rugby They hosted us for a welcome in into their club, which is hosting each week, hosting three or four teams to train in and get some pitch time and stuff before their games in Whangarei. They welcomed us in at lunchtime, and an unbelievable ceremony called the Pōwhiri.
Yeah, Pōwhiri, which I think is the is a traditional welcoming ceremony, and it's something we've been looking forward to because we've known it's been coming, but not really having much expectation of what would be involved. You know, quite often when you see touring teams visiting New Zealand, they get, you know, haka welcomes at the airport and a lot of fanfare. But I think we both agree that that was one of the most moving experiences of not just the last 209 days, but in all my traveling around the world and all the warm welcomes we've had. For some reason, that arrival at Northern Rugby and the way that we were treated like, and we were treated like guests of honor, that it, you know, we just two sweaty cyclists that have come into the community, and so very, very humbling. And we were, and the sort of the haka, the and again, all the terminology which we learned at the time is now completely gone out of my head, but the welcoming haka, which is done by this young troop, these young children, boys and girls from probably 6 to 16, one or two adults in support, and it was absolutely beautiful and gentle and mesmerizing. You know, we used to watching the haka on TV, and it's aggressive and it's a big challenge, and you sort of look at it and you start shitting yourself. But here it was just like completely the opposite, and really, really was very, very moving. This troop is sort of exists to help save and maintain the traditions, the Maori language, and a lot of the traditions. So it was very, very moving. We were there for a few hours. We got treated to lunch, traditional lunch. We watched the young girls playing tag rugby as well, and it's quite cool. You know, the Japanese team had just left as we were arriving at the club, so they were training. So it really made us feel that the Rugby World Cup was looming large.
Yeah, and it just shows the level of effort that they gave to Ron and I arriving. What an awesome idea it is from New Zealand Rugby and World Rugby to host games so far north, because I guess maybe at times the north gets a bit neglected.
Yeah.
It was incredible to see the excitement of people a little bit further away from the main CBDs, getting excited for a World Cup. I'm just going to quickly play you a little snip from that Pōwhiri, because you know they do the hakas and they sing various songs, but this is like a 6 or 7 year old girl who was basically serenading all the guests that were at this Northland Rugby arrival. So, you know, we had that for at least 30 minutes, yeah. Variations of it. All the girls were singing to us. All the boys were singing to us. Some of the adults were singing it. You know, they ended off with a haka, which wasn't an aggressive haka.
It's quite the opposite. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was incredible. And that was our welcome. You know, we got to speak and meet various other people of the rugby community there. We watched a rip game of rugby that was hosted by the Northland Northland stakeholders, and there's it was all an all ladies, young girls between probably 10 and 13 playing rip rugby and enjoying it and being actually quite good, sidestepping and running full pace for a good 30-40 minutes, and then we went inside and we got to share our story with various people from the Northland Rugby, and Silika was also joined us. She's a all-star of New Zealand rugby, played hundreds of caps for her, hundreds of caps in for different clubs and international appearances and sevens. She's won World Cups and Players of the Years and a whole lot of different things. So it was awesome to meet her. It was quite incredible because she's quite small.
Yeah.
As a human, and she's unbelievable at rugby.
Yeah. She was, and she told her story about how nobody gave her a chance. to play rugby and suggested she play every other sport under the sun. But she was determined to play rugby and absolutely crushed it. A great lesson, not just for girls, but young boys as well, who sort of, some people sort of try and put off the game. But, you know, Chesn Colby, as another example, and from the men's, well, so was also told for many, many years he was too small. So it's just a great another story of people proving other people wrong. And then we had to rush off because we had a special reunion.
Yeah, we went to go and visit the Japanese rugby union. They were based in a hotel just a few kilometers from the rugby club.
Sakura 15.
And the Sakura 15, we walked in there and as we were coming in, the Scottish team were leaving for dinner. And I don't know how they worked it, but they kind of almost names out of a hat. But Hino met us at the door, and if you have been listening to this podcast from the start, Hino was the player that handed the whistle over to Ron and I in Ajimoto Stadium, Tokyo, and she was so excited and so happy to see us cycling by the hotel or coming in with the whistle, and I don't think she didn't think we would make it, but she was shocked and so excited that we actually were there.
I think it was incredible. Her excitement was just made my day. It was just like, and then she saw Remji, our mascots, that they presented us at Ajimoto. I mean, they were just giddy with excitement, jumping up and down, and it was absolutely contagious. Because I think it suddenly also was a reminder to us how far we had come in 209 days. And you know, we said goodbye to them with no expectation, and you know, obviously we in the back of minds we were confident we'd make it, but you know, there's no guarantees on who gets selected for the team, you know, for the team in the future. And to know that both the ladies that presented us with the whistle had been selected, and we got to have this, you know, from their point of view, very unplanned reunion 2 days before kickoff of the World Cup.
Yeah, and it took us back to our route where, you know, they didn't speak English, like they can't speak English, and we could still communicate. We're like, oh, it's us with the whistle.
Sagoi, which means amazing.
You know, and can hold a 20-minute conversation of whatever whatever it was, with no language, with this language barrier, but it was it was just pure human connection. So it was incredible.
It was full circle, and shout out to Jason, communications manager for the team, who's Aussie by birth but speaks absolutely fluent Japanese, and he was an incredible host and facilitated the reunion. And also thanks to Fiona again for reaching out to Japan Rugby to facilitate it. So I mean, what a day that was. 60 kilometers of beautiful riding, a Pofri welcome from Northern Rugby, and then a reunion with our friends from Sakura 15.
And then we had a home-cooked meal by the Bateleys. They were hosting us, Sarah and Alex, friends of my aunt who lives in South Africa. In Pretoria, never met them, welcomed us into their home, gave us home-cooked meals. So thanks for that as well. So, you know, a little cherry on top.
I had a little cheeky 2 kilometer climb up to their beautiful home, which overlooks Whangarei. But another great story of people who took a chance in life and, you know, moved countries with no guarantees of employment and have started a new life in Whangarei. And they're just, you know, I'll just... Sarah works at the local high school there. Alex just got a job. He's a pilot, works for Boeing. They just seem to be so, so happy. And it's just, again, the reward of having the courage to do something different.
Yeah, so that ended off a great day. The next day, we had a few more commitments, but we also got to just hang around Whangarei and just, you know, experience the atmosphere of this town or city that was
invited to the stadium. We got a tour of the stadium in the morning.
Yeah, we went to More FM for a radio interview.
Yep.
We met up with Northland Cycling. We're just hanging out in Whangarei on the eve of our most northern destination of New Zealand.
Departure from the most northern.
Departure, even, yeah. And It was something that wasn't meant to be on it makes no sense to go past our destination and come back to it, but it was worth every...
It was a really special couple of days.
And you know, it's often when we plan routes and work out where we want to go A to B, sometimes these crazy decisions work out for the better.
It was really cool. And also just to be able to make sure that we've visited all three stadiums, and we'll talk about the third stadium just now, but... important to visit all three stadiums before kickoff of the tournament was important for us as well. So that meant, Friday the 7th of October.
Yeah.
Woke up in Whangarei, went to the stadium to go and get a few photographs. We were joined by six or seven people.
Batters joined us again.
Welcome back, Batters. The family came out to join us as well to come say goodbye. And we had a few pictures and a beautiful, glorious sunny morning in Whangarei, overlooking the stadium, all branded up, ready for the weekend. We then headed south.
We headed south, this time on the Highway 1 towards Warkworth. That was going to be our final destination. With all the morning commitments and photographs and visiting the stadium, we were leaving way too late to make it into Auckland at a safe hour, without avoiding the motorway and so on. We made that our final destination for the day, and just cruised through it again.
And our last 100 kilometer day.
Our last century.
World Cup 2021, 105 and a half kilometers.
Funny enough, we ended off at a fast food area, but we were brave and we didn't commit to eating down on a burger or a pizza. We kept our athletic stamina strong. And then from there, we went back to our original base at the Brodies and prepared ourselves for our final day, which would be the 8th of October. We've had this date set in stone for a very long time. It was it's the opening weekend and the opening day of the Rugby World Cup 2021. And it was important that we deliver the whistle at Eden Park. And it was a 30-kilometer loop. Because we went to Whangarei and visited that stadium, we made sure we went to Watikiri to visit the third stadium of the Rugby World Cup 2021.
Yeah, west of Auckland. And I think as well, just for the people who might not be familiar with the geography of Auckland, the shortest route would have been straight south if we didn't want to visit Waitakere. But there's only two options there. One is to cross the motorway bridge, which you're not allowed to do, and the second is to catch a ferry. And I think we've learned our lesson cycling to Sydney, maybe not to rely on the ferries in case of the bad weather. So it was a good excuse to head west as well. And as I say, Waitakere Stadium was pretty much bang on route on the west, if you take the westerly sort of loop around to get to Eden Park from the northern beaches.
And we just did a drive-by. They were 2 weeks out of actually hosting any games, so the stadium was still bare as what it is. I think it's an athletic stadium. But then we did our final 10 or 15 kilometers towards Eden Park, where we had a great range of people waiting for us.
Yeah, and I think, it was just also shout out to the Pearsons, who joined us just at Burko Park for the 30Ks into Eden Park. Victor and his older brother Craig, I was very good friends with Victor at school. Craig was a few years ahead of us, but Victor and his wife and his two kids came out. Craig brought a couple of mates out, and I haven't seen them for decades. So to see them in the morning and for them to, for us to be able to share the journey with them was very, very cool. And as I say, we've cycled into Auckland, sort of left ourselves 500 or 600 meters from the stadium at a coffee shop there, where the Child Fund team were waiting for us to cheer us in. Another old friend of mine I haven't seen for years is now a policeman working in Auckland and was on night shift, so he couldn't make it to join us for the ride, but he came out to see us before going home for the day to go and sleep. So a morning of reunions and coffees and high fives and back slapping, and that left us, as I say, half a kilometer to the end.
We cycled that half kilometer down a red carpet. Not a real red carpet, but it felt like a red carpet. Figurative red carpet. And we had the team from DHL, the team from Old Rugby, the team from Child Fund Rugby, all waiting there with their cameras to welcome us in. And we were greeted with a high five and a bit of a hug from Alan, CEO of World Rugby. And it was just incredible to know that we had, those were our main supporters of this journey, and they were waiting for us on a big day. They had thousands of other things to do. And it was, surreal. And this wasn't actually the official, they were just waiting outside of the stadium. That's how excited they were.
This is sort of 2 hours before kickoff of the first game, or 3 hours before, 2.5 hours before kickoff of the first game, hour before the gates were open to the public. And as Adam says, to think that, you know, World Rugby, the CEO, has got a lot more better things to be doing than to wait for two cyclists outside. But since day one, World Rugby have just been the most incredible support to us. Obviously, Child Fund Rugby, it's a very mutual benefit, a very mutual relationship there. You know, I hope we've done everything we can to support them on our journey, and likewise, they've done everything they can to support us. And of course, once we were inside, we had some DHL representatives there as well. So all the key stakeholders of the journey, there to welcome us in. And as Adam says, even just the approach into the stadium before the official handover, we were made to feel like rock stars. Media at the bottom, the cameras, all sort of there to film the moment. And I was almost personally just going to say that I was actually like, it's suddenly like, it was such an easy ride in, you know. It was like, you know, the last day, 30Ks, that last 500 meters, and it all felt so simple, all going so smoothly. But arriving there, suddenly I was like quite, you know, just like really hit home. It was a little bit quite emotional actually as we arrived at the stadium, seeing the guys waiting outside. And then we still had the real fun stuff and the real handover to look forward to.
Yeah, once we had our security passes and we submitted our COVID checks and so on, Pierre Alexander took us aside and took us into, I'd say, the team tunnel where the buses dropped the teams off at the change rooms. Someone from Auckland Rugby just let us know that we would be the first people ever to cycle a bicycle onto the field, which was quite incredible. And we waited at this doorway, and then they opened the doors, cameras rolling, and we actually physically cycled onto the field where Maggie Cogger-Orr was waiting for us.
Yeah, down the tunnel where the players be running out an hour or two later.
And yeah, it was quite incredible. That's, you know, you cycle again, empty stadium, like Ajumato Stadium. So you can really feel that energy of, you know, how you know, I don't know how, like how monumentous this is.
I think the difference here was that, you know, the field was immaculate. It was obviously all completely branded up, ready for rugby to take place in 2 hours. So there was that sort of like quiet before the storm kind of feeling to it, and just like almost just stepping out there and just looking around and going, like, it's incredible that, you know, we've just finished this journey of a lifetime. But also to think that the journey of a lifetime for all these hundreds of players involved in the World Cup would be starting at the same place where our journey finished just a few hours later.
So yeah, what a journey. We handed over the whistle. I don't know if we were prepped to, because the cameras were like just rolling and we're not sure what. I always make the joke, what do I do with my hands? You know, like we just started speaking
in this
and
case,
saying,
what do you do with our mouths?
We just started saying random stuff, and people were appreciative and understood the. I think it was also for some of the refs that were not Maggie on just, you know, kind of watching
the team. Yeah,
they realized, you know, how cool this is that. They're paying all of this respect to the refs. Maggie even made a comment that refs never get this sort of attention. Yeah. So if, like Ron mentions quite a lot, like in a small way, as long as we can put women referees, the women's game on the map and create this legacy for the game going forward, we've done something great.
There's no way as World Rugby can not make sure that the referees has a whistle next in England 2025. And I think also just shout out to Maggie, who obviously, you know, a month or so before the tournament, when they appointed the referees for the opening game, we knew it would be her that we would be lucky enough to meet to hand over the whistle. And she couldn't have been more gracious. And I think she really appreciated the moment herself as well. And I hope it's something that she remembers as long as we do as well. And it was great to see her a couple of hours later blowing the game off. And I believe that she was using our whistle as well.
So, I actually don't. Yeah, we haven't asked if she at least blew it once, but yeah, it was really cool. And we got to watch that game up in the hospitality seats. World Rugby and Child Fund Rugby hooked us up.
Yep.
And the stadium was a sellout. So they played three games on the one day. We've mentioned this before. So there was this atmosphere of the festival of rugby that was going on. This is where we could really just step back. Just we actually
them,
locked
basically.
Our bikes up somewhere in a storeroom. Just socialize and just take a deep breath and enjoy. And the opening game was South Africa, France. So we got to, you know, support our ladies who are phenomenal women.
Yeah.
They've tried and played their hearts out. There's not a single second where we can criticize their efforts. They've just gone above and beyond of where women's rugby in South Africa has come from a few years ago. Yeah. So well done. We were in the VVVVVIP box and we got to see a whole lot of special people. Dan Carter, big fan. We got to see Rita Ora from up in the the stands. Yeah. We got to see the Prime Minister of New Zealand, yeah. Jacinda, and then some a whole lot of other important people. But you know, those are some highlights.
Chairman of the World Rugby, Bill Beament, Sir Bill Beament, and all the important people in the game of rugby from around the world. And I think what a celebration of women's rugby that really sort of. I mean, what a way to kick off the tournament. Absolutely genius to get Rita Ora involved, sell out day one. I mean, I was surprised pleasantly how many people got there, were waiting at the gates when they opened at 1 o'clock, which is well over an hour before the South African game. So there was thousands of people at the South African French game. And obviously by the time Rita Ora came on before the final game, New Zealand, Australia, and obviously the New Zealand, Australia itself, the atmosphere there was just incredible. And I think it really has been a stake in the ground for women's rugby going forward, and what a celebration! I like to think of it as the sort of thanks very much to World Rugby for hosting the biggest party as for our rival, but a very very special day, and just to be able to soak it all in, and I guess in some way enjoy the fruits of our labour.
Exactly, and it's one of those events that. I've never been to a Rugby World Cup before. I've never supported, besides in Sydney, a South African team outside of my own home country. A lot of emotions, singing that anthem, just soaking it all up. And what an incredible into the trip.
Race to Rugby World Cup 2021 was officially a wrap.
It was a wrap. And yeah. Definitely a wrap when my head went to the pillow that evening. In summary, it was 209 days. Seeing Ron, I need to get my Strava set up so I can get the exact kilometers, but it's roughly 16,000 plus kilometers.
Definitely 11 countries.
11 countries. And so many different people we've met. It's thousands, thousands, thousands. It would be interesting to know how many we could count if it was possible. And lifelong memories and unbelievable experiences. You know, I've changed as a human being from March to now. And, you know, people like roll their eyes, oh, sure you have. I'm like, but you can't. It's just like one of those things that happens. You change.
You can't do something like this or not. I mean,
if you didn't change, I think there'll be a problem. We've had a week now to reflect, and it's just emotionally, it's like wrapping your head around it, your heart around it, your like what now, like it's just incredible. And you can only do these sort of things if you step out of your comfort zones and take on the challenge. And if you want that aura of experiencing this feeling, you know, start small if you want. Do a 3-day hike through whatever reserve is nearby your house, and you can expand it and go 1 week, then 2 weeks, then 1 month. If you really want to feel this feeling that we have right now in our bodies, do 7 months or 8 months. But yeah, it's highly recommend doing something like this, touring on a bike. Turn on a motorbike, turn in your vehicle in a camper van, something crazy.
Yeah, I've never ever read one story or article or read a blog or a book about somebody, in our case, cycling around the world or doing a big multi-country trip and regretting it. This is my third big bicycle trip, and I certainly don't have any regrets. And it is, and obviously quite the opposite. But I think and again, without trying to sound like too philosophical, like the hardest bit of this trip, I think we all agree, or you and I agree, is getting to the start line. There were so many challenges just getting this journey off the ground, primarily because of COVID, if nothing, as the sort of the top of mind thing. But so getting to that start line, we were both all in and determined, and the whole power of the made up mind thing. And we just knew we were going to make this journey happen. We knew we were going to cycle from Tokyo to Auckland. We knew it wouldn't be easy. We knew there'd be challenges. And all that came true, and we knew we were going to have the adventure of a lifetime. So I think all of that happened, and you know, it probably in some ways was harder than we expected. I'm sure at times it was funner than we expected. I'm sure at times it was harder and more miserable than we expected at times. And there was moments and days when you're feeling under the weather and you go, oh, where's the fun in this? But any great adventure, the upper, higher, the lows, sometimes at the time feel lower, but you look back and that's just all part of what makes an adventure. And as you said, like, you know, we obviously, we've gone on and on about DHL, Child Fund and World Rugby, who've been incredible. All the local unions we engage with, the rugby communities we've engaged with, from professionals down to the most grassroots with Child Fund programs, to rugby clubs we just bumped into, rugby clubs that have hosted us, you know, the rugby network, through friends and ex-players and things like that that have looked after us, has been incredible. Ordinary people, the thousands we've met whose names we'll never remember and never know, who we engage with, and whether we engage directly, whether it was eating noodles at a noodle shop with them, or, you know, someone pulling over in their fancy camper van, giving us a Coke, all just people we've waved at and smiled at, and just had a moment together, which we often refer to as just for us, those moments you can't capture on camera or film. A journey like this just has thousands of those interactions and lifelong memories, and something that whatever happens, will just always be in there as, yeah, a shared experience and something we'll look back on our rocking chairs with great pride and hopefully fondness.
Yeah, well, I've got every country inked on my body, so it's there forever. But I think to wrap this up, like a little fun activity, Ron, we go each country, name the country, and then just give one, it can be as random as anything, highlights of that country. And so just give something for someone who's listening to this podcast to bring up in a conversation, and we can elaborate on it.
And just to say, this is unscripted, unplanned.
Yeah.
This is the first thing that comes to mind.
First thing. So Japan, what was incredible for you there? Or it was 14 days or so?
30. Yeah, a little bit longer, including quarantine. So I think for me, Sagoi.
Sagoi, amazing.
It just, that keeps jumping to mind.
Mine would be the trash.
The lack of trash.
It's, you know, and so I think we're going to play this game all the way into New Zealand now, because it's people like take things for granted. Like I was talking about coastlines earlier in this pod, but it's the first time I've been to a country, like I've been to Europe and that, but a country where you're responsible for your own trash. Yeah. And it was just something eye-opening, and it's crazy that the rest of the world doesn't do it. So that,
and obviously Sakura. I've never been to Japan. I've been to Japan a few times, but never in the springtime. So the Sakura, the cherry blossoms are out, and obviously made an impact on you because now on your tricep.
All right. Vietnam, food. It was not the best food we had on the trip, but it was the first exposure to what we were in store for and what negotiating and selecting street food and food on the, well, I don't know if it is street food, it's called street food, what was about to be like. And that, you know, that's a comfort zone thing that you step out of. They just throw in a hoof of whatever animal into a bowl full of delicious vegetables and you eat it and you appreciate it. And that was, yeah, Vietnam.
Sweat. That's when we realized we were in the middle of Southeast Asia in the hot season. So, we certainly pushed a few beads, and we went from just running into 7-Elevens to get hot coffees to probably drinking 12 to 15 liters of fluid a day as we cycled from Hanoi down to Ho Chi Minh and then into Cambodia.
So Cambodia?
Astro.
AstroTurf.
I think we talk about it often, but that day with Child Fund, in the middle of Phnom Penh, the capital city, on a blisteringly hot, well, it had rained hard that morning, it was rain lying everywhere, but blisteringly hot, sweaty day. Honestly, those young girls and boys touching a rugby ball for the first time, and just, I think, yeah, I know we both got it, but just the joy I got out of that day, that's a memory for life.
I've had a few, and I'm not a hippie, but I guess I am. I don't know. But I had an out-of-body experience visiting the Angkor Wat temples. I took a CR500 for a couple kilometers down the road, like 300 kilometers down the road, and had a sunrise session at this historic monument site. And I don't know if I ate something funny in the morning or not, but it was incredible. I don't know how, it's not the easiest to relive that feeling, but that was a special time.
It is a very spiritual place.
Angkor Wat sunrise session on my CR500 with one t-shirt, and I think I was wearing my Birkenstocks, so I should have had some closed shoes, but anyways, it was amazing.
Thailand. Oh, Kalpat.
Fried rice. That is a big highlight. Definitely for me.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it was good to be, I mean, Thailand was home for a few years, so it was good to be home. But I also think, and your good point you often make, I'm going to probably summarize in two words, is the back road. So I've seen a lot of Thailand before, but to be able to cycle from Bangkok down to Phuket into the Malaysian border, and to link all these places that I've visited before, and to cycle through these rice paddy fields with, you know, coconut trees and just, yeah, all the little bits in between that are often ignored on the tourist map. So I think, yeah, I think that for me is a good memory.
Thailand was one of my favorite countries on this trip, if not the favorite.
Yeah.
So it's really hard. Obviously loved the food options there. I'd say a special moment there was meeting a little 10-year reunion with my one mate. Just how it all planned out was quite cool. So that one was incredible. Rob, yeah. I'll see you in another 10 years. And then
Malaysia.
Ooh.
Sunny.
I think Sunny's up there. Sunny's definitely up there.
Sunny and Rex, I guess. if ever we're going to get Sultan.
Yeah, I'm up there with Sultan. It was quite incredible.
And food again. I mean, we could say food almost every country, but I'm going to go Sunny and Rex being hosted for the entire length from Malaysia down to Singapore by two incredible human beings, one an old friend of mine and one who's become a friend of both of ours. The way that they were just, Rex said months before he's in, he at one stage about 7 or 8 people had signed up. They all over time dropped out, like does sometimes happen. But Rex stuck to his guns. He joined us from day one. Every day was the longest day I'd ever ridden on a bicycle. And just the support and the friendship and the camaraderie that we had with him. And then Sunny, who's his head of sales at Asa Abloy, where he worked, local Chinese Malay, who enthusiasm for life and in fact is a very, in his own way, a very spiritual guy. But his enthusiasm to show us the best food of every meal for all three meals a day, you know, not fancy stuff. Most of the time, just normal street food, plastic tables and chairs, but every single one of the 3 times 14, so let's call it 40 meals that we shared together. It's hard to choose which is the best. They'd probably be the top 50 meals of our entire trip.
Yeah, I'd also bring up my experience with changing culture and challenges that all countries go through. And someone mentioned the word positive discrimination when we were there. And explained it, you know, how it's affected Malaysia and how they've overcome it as a country. And, you know, they're working towards it and they bring up these similarities between South Africa and so on. And yeah, it was just, it's humbling to, well, it just makes you realize that there's a lot, the world is big and the issues aren't just in where you're from. They can be out there and people aren't negative about them. They're trying to solve them and they're solving them slowly but surely. So it was also quite an eye-opener, you know, like you just think all the problems of your land or wherever you are is only your country. But, you know, we can take lessons from different places around the world and bring them back home. And I guess that's the power of travel.
Yeah, I must say Malaysia, yeah, and also shout out to Nath for hooking us up with a visit to Sultan of Perak and some of the schools there. But also it's the first time I've been to and I had an extended trip to Malaysia. All my previous trips have been sort of 2 or 3 days here and there. And I must say, I left Malaysia going like, if there's any country on this journey or anywhere where I could see myself spending some more time, an extended period of time, I think Malaysia would be up there for me.
Then Singapore.
Singapore. You go first.
I want to just say the word, it's a metaphor, but I just say the word beers because it's just to wrap your head around how a few meters or kilometers north and a few kilometers south of that border, things are maybe 10 to 20 times less expensive.
Yeah.
And it's eye-opening that this little speck of Southeast Asia is this like financial hub of the world. And can yeah. and can be this like expensive, beautiful, and like, you know, the buildings and the infrastructure is valid, but it's just...
No, the contrast between southern Malaysia and northern Indonesia couldn't be any starker. And I'm going to actually, you gave me a moment to sort of buy some time there, but I'm going to just, sounds a bit corny, but reunions. So again, reunion with Jonesy, reunion with a lot of other rhinos, old friends of mine from the region. You also connected with
Tyron
as well. And I think that's been a theme of our journey throughout. So it seemed particularly apt. At some stage, we have to bring it up. And Singapore was very special in that regard.
Indonesia, now this was a long one, 45 days. I don't even. I would say the ferry.
I was actually thinking ferry as well. That was certainly an adventure within an adventure. But
I think it's all the ferries. That one was what highlighted. But because we were on that long 4-day ferry, we started realizing all the other ferries we've had. Like we often forget about that 11-hour ferry on day 2 of Indo.
That's a good point. Through those mangroves. Yeah, and even just trying to find out the information about the ferries. So it's when you're in New Zealand, you go to an online timetable. It's all there. It's it's all very accurate, same as Australia. But Indonesia, good luck. Just arrive and hope.
And cigarettes. That was also a big one.
Yeah. But we were hosted by people in the cigarette industry and we're surrounded by people smoking them.
Yeah. So there's something eye-opening there.
But a very, it's just, we were there for almost 45 days. 6 or 7 different islands. Changing cultures within a country. It's going to be hard to relive that ever in life. I mean,
yeah.
Too amazing.
Then East Timor, Timor Leste. It's going to be corny, but it's just the word Timor Leste. People have no idea that this is a country. So it's cool to visit one of those places that no one knows of.
Well over half the people we mentioned are to like look at you and you have to explain exactly where it is. So Timor-Leste, and I'm going to be optimistic here and go possibility. Like there's so much possibility there with ecotourism, I think. The hills there, go mountain biking, trail running, hiking.
Proximity to Australia.
Proximity to Australia. The beaches potentially, well, they are beautiful and just, you don't want to overdevelop, but... With a bit, Bali, Lombok, relatively close by, very, very popular with tourists, and they've done, relatively responsible tourism in some of those places. So, it's a country which is a relatively new country. It's been through a lot of turmoil. It's got a huge amount of challenges, but out of those challenges, I think there's a lot of possibility and hopefully a bright future.
Then Australia. Which could be split up into 3 states that we cycled through, Northern Territory, Queensland, and New South Wales. It's probably going to be quite hard to give it, but my one off the bat, I'd say not listening to people that are not Australian or Australian. Yeah. Just knowing that Australia is this big place that has a lot of educated people that can write reviews and try and get clickbait and a lot of tourists that visit there that also write reviews and travel blogs and get clickbait. But until you actually get there and do it yourself, you can kind of make sense of, understanding that this is a first world country. So compared to Vietnam and Sumatra Island in Indonesia and that, it's not the most dangerous place in the world.
Yeah, I think what Adam is getting to is that so many people, especially in the outback section, are telling us, we're going to die from bitten by snakes. You got to watch out for scorpions. Where you're going to find water, food, and then people start talking about the roads down, the Bruce Highway through Queensland. People tell us, the drivers are terrible and the roads terrible. And there's potholes, and you say, well, boss, we cycled from Hanoi to Ho Chi Minh City. We've cycled through Jakarta. I think we'll be all right. my word is going to be outback, just because it's part of the country I've never seen. It's this word that just elicits. People just, talk about it in, it just kind of epitomizes adventure and ruralness and wildness. And I think, again, within a trip, an adventure within a trip, just to cycle the outback in any stage of your life, if you've got a couple of weeks to do it or a month or two, and you want to go and do something wild and different. People go, it must be so boring. But in its own way, it's beautiful. We had headwinds the whole way, so it was a challenge. But it really was... Yeah, as I just for me, it really was just it felt like a really great adventure within what was even a greater adventure.
I agree. And we only probably, I don't know, we haven't done this. This is just off the bat, but we probably only touched 1-2% of the whole outback. This country's massive.
Yeah, it's huge.
So you can explore that place for years on end if you afraid of airplanes and you live in Australia, you can just get in a camper van. And we saw
people literally doing that, literally exploring for years.
You can explore the outback for years. Fiji.
Bula.
Bula.
It's the friendliest country in, it's one of, I mean, again, how do you, it's on a, in a list of 11 very friendly countries, Fiji is right up there with them. All Fijians we'd met and I have met, we've met before. They have this, you know, they're always friendly and gentle and you always have this reputation of being friendly and gentle. But when you get there, it is just, it's everyone you meet, almost without exception, is more friendly, more gentle, more kind, more relaxed than all the sort of stereotypes lend themselves to be. So I just think the people of, for me, just the people of Fiji, we cram so much into our 6 or 7 days there. But my overall impression will be, yeah, just the friendliness and the goodness of the people.
Yeah, they are incredible. I'd say mine would be St. Joseph's. that's, if you want more of that, find myself in a once-in-a-lifetime situation at about midnight in the middle of Suva. And I don't think anyone can ever recreate that, especially as a Westerner. Yeah. That's being not at an all-girls school.
All-girls school reunion of which had about 6 males and 1 white person.
So that was pretty messed up. And fun and amazing and what a night.
And I think that on the second, it would be somewhere between rugby and Carver would be two other themes of the time. And
too Fiji. Much Carver. New Zealand.
Sure. New Zealand. This is a tough one. What are you leaning towards?
I'm going to say landscapes.
Yeah. What was that Crown Range? I'm going to actually say, I'm going to get more specific and say the cycle up from Queenstown to Wanaka up the Crown Range on the most unbelievable spring day. It was cold, but dry and blue skies. You had a beautiful snowfall the night before. So you got Coronet Peak just covered in snow. People had warned us about it in terms of the difficulty of it, and you could, it doesn't take a genius to look on Komoot or Strava to see what we're up against or up. But that climb for probably took you 2 hours, took me 3 hours, was just sort of summed up, I think, New Zealand on a bicycle. We had a lot wilder weather, but just the great, you know, that snapshot in time, the great weather, but the rolling hills, as you say, the landscapes, and obviously it was nice to be able to share it with Batters as well.
Yeah, landscapes. So the dark side of travel is often your imagination getting skewed by the reality. This is the world we live in with Instagram versus reality. And so my imagination, watching Lord of the Rings, reading Lord of the Rings, you have this vision of what these landscapes are going to look like. And in your heart, you just hope for all circumstances that it's not worse than what you're thinking, because it just disappoints you. And New Zealand, it was better. It's a weird one. I don't know. The cameras obviously don't do it justice. You've watched all of those films and seen the footage. When you see it in real life, it really is better. So dark side of travel and imagination didn't work in New Zealand. You know, sometimes it might work looking at a skyscraper in a big CBD, but not this time around. It was
New Zealand
incredible.
Exceeds expectations every single time. And I think it's very apt that we finished off in a rugby mad country, a country where women's rugby is celebrated as much as it is. And I'm so glad we made a decision to cycle from Invercargill and not take the easy option and flying into somewhere like, you know, Christchurch or Wellington and shorten it. But we cycled as much of New Zealand as we could in the time available. I think we both agree, and you can hear from our voices, that we were rewarded over and over again. And to be able to cycle into Eden Park, having successfully pulled this off, high-fiving each other, we did everything we absolutely could to raise as much money and awareness for Child Fund Rugby. Every one of our engagement with them has just reinforced to me anyway what an amazing organization they are. And whatever we can do for the next few weeks while we're still in New Zealand for the World Cup, to help push the SMS, to help push any last minute donations, to help spread the word, I'm certainly, and I know you certainly feel the same, that we'll do whatever we can. So from their point of view, and just to have shared it with you, boss. What a privilege, eh?
Thank you for bringing me along. I watched Top Gun the other day, and I'm the it was a good team. Well, I don't know. I don't have action finish it, but at least the first few scenes, it was cool. We were good pilot, co-pilot, jet wanderers of Top Gun. So yeah. Shot.
So there we go. No, but thanks for the memories. And thanks to everybody who's supported us in any way. We can only say thank you so many times. But anybody who's on the route, donated, sponsors, people who've helped, people who've put us up, you know who you are. People who've supported us on social media, people who've reached out. Sorry to those we haven't replied to. It's not always easy to keep on top of everything. But this brings a close to 2021, which has been unbelievable. Thanks for listening.